You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Last week on Friday, a terrorist attack took place at the Countdown in Lynn Mall in the suburb of New Lynn in Auckland. Six people were stabbed and one person injured by the attacker after he collected a knife from inside the store. The attacker was shot and killed by police within 60 seconds of the attack. It was revealed shortly after that the attacker was known to the police and the government as he was under police surveillance due to having bought large hunting knives, possessed Islamic State videos, and being an outward supporter of ISIS. As part of an ongoing investigation into some of the issues surrounding New Zealand's counter-terrorism strategy, I first wanted to look into the counter-terrorism legislation bill proposed by the government. This morning, I spoke to Professor Richard Jackson, who is the director of the National Centre for Peace and Conflict Studies at the University of Otago. We talked about some of the gaps in and issues raised about the government's bill. Firstly, for some background on how the bill came to be, after the Christchurch terror attack, the Royal Commission of Inquiry made a number of recommendations for the government. In response, the government proposed the Counter-Terrorism Legislation Bill, which would make a number of changes to our law and the way we deal with terrorism. According to the MP in charge, Justice Minister Chris Fahafoe, the bill aims to amend the Terrorism Suppression Act 2002, the Search and Surveillance Act 2012, and the Terrorism Suppression Control Orders Act 2019 by implementing a single broad policy to better prevent and respond to terrorism and associated activities by ensuring designation, offence, and control order provisions apply effectively to conduct that is or that creates an unacceptable risk of terrorism and associated activities. Professor Richard Jackson says some of the key measures or law changes that would be made under the current bill include expanding the definition of terrorism, criminalising acts in preparation of terrorism or planning terrorism, and increasing the powers of the police and security services to have greater surveillance on the public. The legislation is currently being reviewed at Select Committee. Professor Jackson also said it is important to recognise that the government has said that the current bill would not have been helpful in preventing either the Christchurch terror attack or last week's attack at Lynn Mall. This is based on Chris Fahafoe's comments earlier this year that, quote, changes in the bill would not have prevented the March 15 attacks, but they would enable agencies to act in a more efficient and practical way, including against an individual, unquote. And Deputy Prime Minister Grant Robertson's comment yesterday on RNZ's Morning Report that it wasn't possible to say for sure whether the legislation would have stopped the latest attack because the crimes previously committed by the person had been dealt with already by the courts. I will now play you my interview with Professor Jackson, where we cover some of the issues with the counter-terrorism legislation bill, which he says are the restrictions terrorism legislation places on human rights, such as privacy and personal movement, the difficulty to determine someone's intention to commit terrorism, whether the legislation would protect minority groups against the deep racial biases that exist in New Zealand's justice system, and finally, how can you actually define terrorism? I began by asking Professor Jackson to explain some of these issues in more depth.
There are a number of different issues with this bill. The first one being a broad issue, and that is that there's no evidence from around the world that putting in counter-terrorism legislation will actually affect the number of terrorist attacks. So, you know, there's a lot of evidence, in fact, around the world that as you have more legislation, there are actually social costs or negative unintended consequences of that legislation. The important point is that a lot of this is extremely costly, but actually in the end it's kind of ineffective in reducing terrorism. So, you know, it seems like at one level, it's more of a PR exercise, a way of saying to the people, look, we're really doing something. But in actual fact, when you examine what's being done, there's no evidence to suggest that it's actually going to work. And in particular, there are a number of key risks and key potential costs here. And one is that research from around the world has shown that when you bring in counter-legislation, this often has a detrimental effect on individual and human rights. And this is a key problem because other studies have shown that maintaining human rights is actually important for effectively responding to terrorism. It's a kind of a self-defeating thing when you violate people's human rights to try and protect them from terrorism, because that actually creates more grievance and then can actually lead to increased terrorism.
And when we're talking about violating human rights, we're talking about those rights to privacy that come with the potential surveillance that would come under a bill like that. Is that right?
Yes, but also restrictions on people. So it might be, that people have what they call control orders put on them, which affect where they can travel and who they can meet with and things like that. There have been suggestions in this case that things like stripping people of their citizenship be a possibility, being able to deport people and so on. Any of those kinds of human rights violations, and they are human rights violations, in the name of security, usually end up being self-defeating because they create more grievance and more reasons why people choose to commit attacks. But there are some other problems with this particular legislation as well, and one is the problem of trying to work out what intent is. So the argument that people are committing acts that shows that they intend to commit an act of terrorism is, very, very difficult to determine, because this is the other mind's problem. You can't tell what are in other people's minds. You can only infer it, and you can infer it from their actions. And the problem here is that this relies on the imagination of counterterrorism officials and police officers and so on, who have to look at people and try and interpret what they're doing and then see whether they think there's any bad intent there. Now, what we know is that, this is affected by things like institutional prejudices as well as cultural prejudices. So, for example, Muslim people engaging in a particular activity look suspicious in a certain context, whereas the same behavior by other groups doesn't look suspicious, and that's because there is a kind of deeper sense of Islamophobia in Western societies. The risk here is that people who fall into a suspected sort of category, such as young Muslim men, might come under suspicion of engaging in planning terrorism when actually all they're doing are, really quite innocent activities.
And that's a point that the Māori Party and the Green Party have made in the discussions around this bill, isn't it, about how it might negatively impact minority groups and raise suspicions for groups that are already treated poorly in a biased way by the justice system that we have here and the criminal system we have here in New Zealand.
Absolutely. So that's what we have to think about. We have to think about the fact that, this proposed legislation is not going to happen into a vacuum, but it's going to happen into the context of an already institutionally kind of racist society and an already institutionally racist set of institutions like the police, where there are these kind of deep biases that already exist that we know. So the danger is that this could, increase the sense of grievance and the restriction on human rights for these communities, which, as I said, can end up being a self-fulfilling prophecy or counterproductive, because it actually then increases the grievance and the sense of anger and isolation that people might feel, that might make them vulnerable to particular narratives. I mean, another key issue here that particularly relates to the Muslim community is, how do you define terrorism? And if you're expanding the definition of terrorism, who might be caught up in that? So, for example, in the situation of Israel and Palestine, a lot of Muslims support Hamas and Hezbollah as valid resistance movements. They don't actually see them as terrorist groups. They see them as, representing a form of resistance to Israeli colonialism. And they openly support them. Now, if that's defined as support for terrorism, then probably a lot of Muslims in New Zealand are going to get caught up and be potentially accused or come under suspicion of supporting terrorism. So, yeah, we have to be really careful about the fact that, you know, the old cliche, one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter, can come into play in certain circumstances and can lead to these kind of social harms that undermine community cohesion and restrict people's human rights and then be kind of counterproductive.
It really comes down to, I feel like, when we talk about these issues that exist within the bill and some of the gaps and the problems people have raised with it, I feel like the massive overarching thing is speed, the speed that the bill is being pushed through. Is that right? Do I have that correct? Do you feel like there needs to be more time and more consideration put into how this bill will exist, or do you think, is that sort of the crux of it, that it's just too quick?
It is, absolutely. And, you know, it's not surprising. This has happened in dozens of countries around the world, and it's happened as well in New Zealand, in other areas. So whenever there's some kind of really horrific public event which people get very emotional about, it's natural that there's kind of these strong demands that something be done, right? And one of the easiest things to do to kind of relieve that pressure that comes from everybody demanding that something be done is to quickly pass legislation. But as I said, in most cases, the legislation is poorly thought out. It's not based on evidence. And I think we have an opportunity here because the Royal Commission on the Christchurch attacks said that, you know, New Zealand's response needs to be evidence-based and based on best practice and carefully thought out so that it's actually effective. And in some aspects, the New Zealand government is trying to do this. They're trying to set up a national centre for, you know, research into the causes of violent extremism and try to get best knowledge and practice from around the world to inform its response. But for that, we need time. And unfortunately, because of this attack, what's happened is the pressure has telescoped this all into a really intense situation, and the government now feels pressure to really rush this through. And I think this is a big mistake.
That was something else I wanted to touch on, and you mentioned, obviously, last week's terror attack and how that might impact the future of the bill. Are you thinking that it potentially will just cause it to continue, for this legislation to continue to be pushed through the legislative process rather than a point of stopping and thinking?
It seems like that is the way it's going. There is pressure here. And, you know, with the National Party saying that they're going to support this as well, I think the process will be speeded up and the government will be anxious to pass it and be able to say to the public, look, we've done something. You know, we've heard you and we've responded quickly.
Yeah, because I think that was a really interesting point that you made right at the beginning, that the government has said that they aren't even sure whether the bill as it exists currently, if it was enforced, whether it would have made any difference to the two terror attacks we've experienced here in New Zealand. And I don't know, sort of looking at that as somebody who's part of the public in New Zealand, I'm like, well, is that the right law then, if it wouldn't have made a difference?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that, you know, that is, I would hope that that's what the public would demand, is that, you know, we want you to make good laws that will actually work. Don't, you know, what's the point of making a law that wouldn't have actually helped prevent either of these? What we have to do is the research, and there are experts in New Zealand and also around the world who have research on this who can help with that. There's a great article in The Guardian today, you know, about someone, by someone who helped to try and come up with a plan to treat the terrorist in Auckland, but it wasn't really accepted, who, you know, who's got very good suggestions about how we can deal with these kinds of situations in the future. That has got to be listened to, you know, and we would hope that the public would prefer that rather than just something that's kind of like a symbolic gesture.
That was Professor Richard Jackson, who is the director of the National Centre for Peace and Conflict Studies at the University of Otago, speaking about some of the issues raised about the counter-terrorism legislation bill that is currently at Select Committee in the legislative process. Professor Jackson's core concern about the proposed bill is that it will be passed too quickly. He and other experts on terrorism are concerned that there are gaps in the bill and that the law as it is will negatively impact certain communities if it is passed. However, the Prime Minister says that Parliament must act quickly. Following the Lyn Mall terror attack, she said that she wants the law to be passed as soon as possible and no later by the end of this month. For me, I'm planning to investigate a few of the issues surrounding New Zealand's counter-terrorism strategy. Today, I looked at the counter-terrorism legislation bill and some of the issues around it, but I will also be looking into the impact of this law change and terror attacks on minority communities affected and the psychology behind radical thought and how extremism manifests in a person.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.